kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Fun episode later today. We are going to be talking with two of the guys from Moir Effect, I forget their band name. I do what I can. I can only do some. I'm one man. God damn it. I am one man. But before we get to that interview, plenty of other stuff to take care of. And I gotta call in some backup. So Pernell Vaughn, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. A little bit of a sleepy day, but never a bad time for some games. And as who am I kidding? That's why I'm sleepy in the first game. But I'm doing all right, though. How about yourself?
one of those weekends.
Yeah, there it is.
But it's good to have you back on. It feels like just yesterday we were doing something like this. So it's always fun to have you on.
The magic of nostalgia. Familiar faces.
Oh man, so did you have a fun Easter weekend?
I did yard work, so probably not.
I'll take that as fun. Yeah.
it was fun. There's something surprisingly appealing about doing yard work. Not so much when you're pressed for time, but if you're just optimally choosing to do it, it's not so bad. You know, I'm out there pushing the lawnmower around, getting a feel for life, and then taking it away as I run my lawnmower over the fetid grass. And it's just gold. I love it.
That sounds angry.
Oh, yeah. Well, the grass would just stop freaking growing so quickly, it wouldn't have to worry about it. It'd be fine. It wouldn't be stuck facing my red.
Oh, man. Well, you mentioned gardening, and that kind of reminds me of one of the games we have to review this week, so thank you for the segue.
Garden Quest?
Yes, exactly. Actually, no. We're going to kick things off with our reviews with a game called A Rose in the Twilight, developed by Nippon Ichi Software and published by NIS America, released April 11th on the Vita. Yes, the Vita. And Steam for $19.99. A girl awakens in a castle void of color and time, affixed with the curse of thorns upon her back. After meeting a sleeping giant, the two work together to escape. Help them unravel the mystery of the thorns and the history behind the somber castle. Pernell, you're the one who not only did gardening, but covered A Rose in the Twilight as well. So tell me about this game.
Well, you just started off by telling me something about the game, which is that there is not another person that you can meet in the game and befriend, which is okay. I was playing expecting maybe another hero to pop up and hang out with me in this awful, time-warped, colorless castle.
You're so needy.
I am needy. I mean, I get a giant, but is another giant that much to ask for? I ask you. That is not too much to ask for. You know, maybe a bird man, something that can fly, you know, but enough of my prattling rambling. The game itself is actually pretty fun. It was made by the guys who did another game called Hotelnik or Hotelnik. The pronunciation is garbage, but the game is cool with one unfortunate exception, which was that it had a lot of touch. It was touch heavy with the controls. And you didn't control the person so much as you used a little fairy to guide the character around the screen. And you had to use the fairy to duck into shadows and manipulate the light. And I'm not going to go too much into it, but what I'm leading up to is that this game had an awesome concept marred by frustrating controls.
Mm.
Well, thankfully.
This is the Firefly Diary you're talking about?
Yeah, the Firefly Diary.
By the way, while we're quickly discussing this game, I want to ask if anybody from NIS is listening, how the fuck do you pronounce this game's title? Because you gave it a couple shots, and for the people who aren't familiar with this game, I'm going to spell out the actual title of the game. lowercase H-T-O, capital L, hashtag, capital N, lowercase I, capital Q. That's a word. That is a single specific word.
I mean, obviously, it's hotelnik. I mean, just that's casuals.
Do you pronounce the hashtag? Does that give it like an emphasis or emphasis or any, like what?
I know there's like some like weird like memories issue going on with the game where it's like it kind of like warps out and like it gets like the screen becomes staticky and everything becomes like 8-bit style and dialogue occurs. So I don't know. Maybe she's a friggin' robot. And this is like some kind of pound code that is embedded in her code sequence. I genuinely don't freaking know.
I don't fucking know. And anyway, Rose in the Twilight.
Thankfully, this game does not suffer from the same control issues that game did. It is a slow-paced puzzle platformer, unfortunately. So if you're not ready to pace around the map at a slow pace with no run button, you'll be in for a bad time. But if you're okay with the fact that she's a little girl who walks through the castle, you'll be in good shape. Now, the game itself is a castle that is frozen in time, and the little girl who is trapped in the castle, who is cursed with I guess they just refer to it as like the thorn curse, like the curse of thorns. Mm-hmm. And she has to get around this castle by making use of an odd ability that she has due to her powers, where she can remove blood from an object. Because apparently stones have blood.
Clearly.
And gears have blood. But she can remove the blood from an object and place it in a frozen object to give it both color and time again. So objects that are frozen in the air will fall. Objects that were falling will stop and they'll freeze in the air. A number of interesting things happen. And then eventually you reanimate this giant friend who can help you solve puzzles as you control both characters, intermittently switch between characters. God damn, I'm sleepy. There it is! You switch between the characters, and they each have different abilities. So the giant can walk through thorns and not get hurt. He can lift the girl or objects up and throw them. He can... Axials are all the things he can do, but that's all he needs to do. So between the girl who can animate things and the giant who's damn near invulnerable, you make magic happen. And the puzzles get to become pretty convenient and creative because while I don't think you get any new abilities, at least not that I've seen, they keep giving you new things to deal with using the same powers that you have. And since this is not a Zelda-style game, it's not necessarily a frustrating ordeal to have to deal with no more powers. It's okay just knowing that I'm going to have a new puzzle. How do I solve it with my already existent repertoire of moves and abilities?
So, yeah. I got to know, does the game look and move, or not look, but does it play and move as well as it looks? Because the screenshots I've seen, this game is gorgeous.
It is gorgeous, and it animates extremely well. The only downside to this animation that I've come across is that there is one weird movement glitch I have experienced where the little girl can't jump very high, which is, I guess, not a bad thing to experience. I mean, she is small, and a child. She can jump higher than me, shit. But as a result, I'm not sure if it's how it factors into it, but I've had moments where like I'm trying to jump off of an object that may be frozen in the air or up against a wall, and the game won't necessarily allow me to do full hops. Like, I'll kind of get stuck in place there. But there is a suicide button and a pretty generous checkpoint system, so it ultimately didn't really affect my gameplay in a negative way. It was one that was like, oh, I'm stuck. I guess I'll just boot back, whatever. Hmm. And funny thing about it also, the game also uses that in the story itself, is that the little girl is apparently immortal. You learn these things through notes that are left around the ground you pick up in typical, video game fashion in this day and age. And there are moments where there are doors that are blocked by by frozen vines. And the only way you can get them to move is there are special sacrificial zones where you have to take the little girl and sacrifice her. Once I came across one, it was a thorned noose, and you had to hang yourself from it and then kill yourself to open the door. And then you respawn at the bud, at the flower bud checkpoint.
You respawn at the bud.
At the bud. And then there's another one where I got my head cut off by a guillotine. And it's just every time this is happening, you just feel so bad because the little girl is so adorable and precious, and she's walking with the giant, and they're like best friends. And then you have to cut her head off to open a door.
Well, that sounds beautifully horrifying.
It's really horrifying, and you know she feels it. It's like it's not like she just doesn't feel it. She feels every death. It is fucking awful.
Oh, God.
So I guess I sort of started to get able to better cope with it, but it still stings to see that poor angel. But the game itself is fun. Like, I feel as though as long as a person can handle issues with, you know, like there's no run button, and you, every once in a while you may feel a little stuck with a jump or whatever, but it's not a constant thing. I think the game is definitely a fun title, and I enjoyed solving the puzzles as I play through it. I would have bought this game.
Well, you could always get the Steam version, or fuck, no. Buy me a code for the game.
Well, I have it now. But if I ever got a physical version, maybe I'd double dip.
I think there is a physical version.
Wait, is there? I'll have to check because everything I've seen seemed like it was digital only. But I'll check. It would go nice with my Yomawari and my Hotelnik, whatever you pronounce the damn game.
But Hotelnik.
That's the ticket.
Yeah. Well, there was. I think it sold out.
What, the game?
Rose in the Twilight Limited Edition on the NIS store.
Of course it's freaking limited. Damn it.
Includes the game for Vita, collector's box, 36-page softcover art book, 15-song soundtrack, a double-sided rose rubber stamp, and a giant 5-inch stress ball. Oh, my God. I am officially pissed off that I did not get that stress ball.
I am, too. I wanted to have that game. Now my shelf is missing a title in the series of products here.
Motherfucker.
Maybe it'll turn up on Amazon again at some point, and I can find it there or eBay.
I'm sure it'll show up on eBay. But, yeah, stock meter 0 to 5% left. So I'm guessing it's gone.
Yeah. Bloody NIS.
Oh, my God. I wanted that stress ball.
Maybe NIS will be hearing this and they'll take pity on us and send the damn physical copy because I would have bought it if I had known it was there. Thank you for that.
Oh, shit.
But the game is a buy. I think it's worth buying. It's an enjoyable product. It's good for puzzle platforming. It's got a great atmosphere. And the music, while I wouldn't say I'd want it on a soundtrack just yet, I do feel it does great for the game itself. You definitely want to have it playing while you're playing the game.
Nice. Well, again, it's $19.99 on Vita and Steam, and if you get it on Steam, they have a Twilight Digital Bloodlust Edition that includes a digital art book and digital soundtrack. So you could do that. They also have a bundle with... with Hotelnik as well.
Yeah, I think it's. I kind of wonder about that. Like, it seems like they're really trying to get that game out there because they bundled it with Yomawari also. Like, so I'm not sure what it is about that specific game that they bundle it with every subsequent release.
Yeah, it might be the same team, and they're just like, "Hey, no one else has been grabbing this game, so we're going to give it to everybody."
Give everybody Yomawari. It's scary and adorable.
Oh, man. Anyway, speaking of scary, next game to talk about is called RBI Baseball 70. That has nothing to do with scary.
What? A night in the dark, the baseball players have come to play you.
No, RBI Baseball 17, developed and published by Major League Baseball Advanced Media, released March 28th on Xbox One and PS4 for $19.99, also available on iOS for $4.99. RBI Baseball 2017 returns with fast-paced, high-octane, pick-up-and-play baseball action. And I put the emphasis on there for a reason. We'll get to that soon. Take control of your game with reactive pitching and batting for in-the-moment decisions. RBI Baseball 2017 is packed with 30 authentic baseball parks, advanced stat tracking, season game sims, and roster updates throughout the season. Your breakout MLB season is here. You better come ready to play. The main reason I put the emphasis on pick up and play is that this series has been getting a bad rep for a while because hardcore baseball fans are pissed that it's not competing with this, with MLB The Show on PlayStation. Like, it's not trying to be The Show, clearly, based on the fact that it's been a $20 release every year. But people are still expecting, like, the super high production values and high standards of The Show.
And it airs on a different channel entirely.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. It airs on a different channel.
Yeah, see? There you go.
I like that. So I covered this. I think I covered it. Either me or Chris. One of us covered it last year. We talked about it. Wanted to get a fresh opinion on this year's game, so that is why we got you to talk about it, Purnell. So what did you think of Irby Baseball 2017?
Well, you made a good call on asking me about the game because you mentioned earlier how there's this issue with everyone comparing it to MLB The Show. Now, I am not a sports guy. And the last baseball game I bothered to put any real time into was Bases Loaded on the NES. Dabbled a little in Mr. Ken Griffey, but not enough to call it my own. So, clearly I walked into this bad boy flat out under the impression that I don't give a crap about sim stuff. I don't give a crap about how well I can manage my team. All I know is, can I throw a ball and can I hit the ball and can I run a lot around the bases?
Can you?
Well, apparently, yes. when I first booted this game up, I started to play it. I went to exhibition mode because typically if you're a casual baseball guy, and for the record, if that wasn't made perfectly clear, I am reviewing this as a casual, not as a seasoned sports fanatic. So as a typical casual, you're looking at mostly, you know, exhibition mode. You want to pick a team, maybe a friend or a computer pick another team, and you hit some balls. I did that, picked my old favorites, the Toronto Blue Jays, and got to work. They actually did a decent job with making it casual friendly, too, because they have moments where they will pop up like a little controller image in the corner explaining certain controls. Like, here's how you throw a sinker ball, how you throw a fastball, or here's how to switch players. And they keep you apprised of the controls you need to actually perform admirably. So I was having a little bit of fun with it, but the one downside I had was that outfielding was very disorienting to me. And what I mean by that is that I would, the play computer would hit the ball. Ball would go flying in the air, and I'm like, okay, it must be me right there. And I start to control the guy, and then the controller emphasis would just switch to another guy out of the blue. I don't push a button.
I remember that from last year doing the same thing where it's like the game gives you the closest person, and then it decides, oh, wait, no, this guy's closer, and it switches you.
Yeah, and I mean, don't get me wrong, it's admirable that they try to do that, but it's really frustrating when you're in the midst of, I'm going to get it. Let me decide who's closest at that point. Give me the first guy you think, and if it's wrong, I can push the button to change it. I don't need you to do it. But as a result, that resulted in a number of kerfluffles, a lot of goddammits and frustration nations. And it alternatively, also, though it doesn't happen nearly as often, there were times where I would throw the ball from outfield going in, and I guess the game thought it was a dramatic moment, and it would just switch over to, like, the ball coming into the screen to a guy in the diamond. But at that point, I'm disoriented. I don't know which way I'm going to throw the ball because I'm just looking at it as if it was coming down the screen to the bottom, you know? So it threw me off a bit and made for some pretty bad plays on my part. But so at this point, at the end of this set of games, I was really frustrated, turned the game off, and walked away. And I made a little bit of a book face post on the Facebook Nation mentioning that I'm reviewing this game without giving any sort of opinion to it yet. And a friend of mine commented and said, this game's just not good, man. So
did he give a reason why?
And I'll get into that in a second. So so I messaged him and said, yo, man, I need some input because you're a guy who likes baseball games. What's bad about it? I need to know if we have the same issues with the game because I don't want to be that guy getting, you know, mobbed in the streets because I give a good sports game a bad review. And he goes, well, it's just not good. So he couldn't give me a legit concrete reason as to why he disliked the game. Did he have a reason? Maybe. Did he convey that reason to me? Nope. So I decided I need to give this game another try. I got to give it another try or two. I got to feel like if I'm giving it a review, that is an honest review. So I booted it back up and played through two exhibition matches and a season. Not a season. I mean, I'll get to the season in a second. But I played through two exhibition matches. And those two, I was surprised to actually experience a better scenario from that. Like, I didn't have as many issues with the outfield, maybe because I already expected it to happen, so I kind of accommodated for it to adjust my play style so I wasn't getting caught off guard. And ultimately, I actually even played a little bit better. Like, I did better in the game than I did the previous session. And I had a much better time playing it. And also, I will say that the thing I didn't like about it atmospherically, though, I think you mentioned this to me not too long ago, is that the music is like a typical sports game. The music is intermittent. So it's like between innings, it might go, did, 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 and you're like, oh, music. And then it just shuts down. And you can hear a guy whistling from the stands or something. And it's come on, put some music in there.
That's just all baseball games where they don't really play music during the game. It's just in between batters or in between innings. And even more arcade, like heavy arcade style games like Super Mega Baseball are the same way, where it's just, just how it is.
Yeah, because I mean, that's just like a weird thing, a kava I have for myself with games like, if it doesn't have like a specific type of music in or more like a steady stream of tunage, it doesn't make the game bad, but it does it. It's a ding for me. Like, come on, I want music. But I understand where you're coming from when you say that too. Though I was also coming off of it from, again, mentioning earlier, Bases Loaded, which had a steady stream of music, but it's also 1987. So what the heck?
I was gonna say, that is a couple of years ago.
I couldn't afford to go get a dollar's worth of penny candy from the corner store back then. I was a broke bandito. But yeah, I mean, it's this game, I would say, how would I phrase it for potential purchasing? Go into this game knowing what you're getting, which is you're not getting a game where you're following a career of individual players. You won't get random scandals that pop up on the screen resulting in players having to leave your team for a short period of time and weird mess like that. I mean, yeah, you can swap out players on the team. You can manage your roster using downloadable updates. I forgot to mention, you can also play seasons in the game. You have access to either a roster of a classic 16 roster team or a full 25 player team. And your game count can be between 162, 81, or 52 games, which is madness. But I guess that's the authentic season experience.
True.
You can watch some of the games. You can play some of the games. You can do a codgepodge of the bit. They basically give you options to work with it. So I can see it being interesting. I could picture a guy buying this game just to set up a season and just come home from work and eat dinner and watch simulated baseball on his television.
I think last year what I said was, and you can let me know if this has changed or if there's any kind of updates we should know about, but last year I mentioned that if you are a hardcore baseball fan who needs the latest and greatest sim, you already own a PS4 and the show, and you're probably not listening to this review. If you're more of a casual baseball fan, or if you don't own a PS4 in general, since, you know, Xbox doesn't really have much in the way of baseball games, this is, you know, a decent enough and good enough place to start and just have some baseball.
I think that is still a very accurate statement to make about this game, which also makes me think, too, how in the world is it that I'm thankful these guys managed to do it, but how is that no one else has stepped up to make a baseball game for this system? I don't even get that. Like, It just doesn't compute. The system is developed in the States. Baseball is a U.S. sport. It is a popular U.S. sport.
See, that seems like the endless debate every year of like, well, why doesn't EA make them or why doesn't 2K make them anymore? And you have to wonder if the audience was big enough and the money was there, someone would be doing it. So I have to imagine like the EA MVP baseball games or the 2K games, because 2K for a while, they did yearly games and they would even have like $1 million home run contest or perfect game contest or shit like that. And you have to imagine that they just didn't sell enough to be worthwhile.
That's probably, maybe that's the only thing I can think of, because I mean, as we can tell from the other roster of sports games out there, football and I guess even basketball, when they sell, they pump them out. So, yeah. And they pump it out to every system. Hell, you can get Madden on the frickin' Xbox 360 still. And that thing's like ancient at this point in game years. So, but you can get it on the PS2 if you really look hard enough.
I wonder game what the Boy last year is they did Madden on PS2.
You can get it on PS4, PS3, Xbox, Xbox 360, Xbox One, Game Boy Color. It's everywhere. Just throw a ball, damn it.
Join us. Now I want to look this up and find out the last year that it came out on PS2.
I'm going to take a guess and say 2009.
You said 2009?
Yep.
You are incorrect, sir.
What, by how much?
2012.
Are you serious?
2012 was the final year that it appeared on the PS2.
Oh my man, they were just beating that horse. Beat them raw.
Yeah.
Picture that one poor kid who's like, my mom won't give me a PS3. Can I get your copy of Madden, please? Does your friends play with you? No, they've all moved on. This is just for me.
Oh shit.
All I'm
right.
So lonely.
Anyway, we should probably move on. I actually have some guest reviews to get to that you're not around for. So, quick, look, a distraction. All right, next game to talk about is called Echoplex, developed by Output Games, published by Output Games and IndieNova. It released April 6th on Steam for $9.99. Echoplex is a cyber horror puzzle game set in a mind-bending near-future world. In the Echoplex, you must outwit your Echo, a duplicate of yourself, who repeats everything you do. When we get horror and puzzle mixed together, there's only one guy to call, and that is Wood. Wood, how are you doing today?
You know, I'm doing pretty good. Just enjoying life out here in Germany.
Nice. How's the weather?
Terrible. But, because it's colder than usual. It's supposed to be springtime, yet tomorrow we might be getting snow.
Really?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
'Tis the season, I guess. I don't fucking know.
Yeah, indeed, right?
So what is Echoplex?
Echoplex is a, well, it is horror and pastel. So basically it's a mix of a platform, like a 3D platformer, where while you're not quite thinking like with portals, is that similar kind of mentality. You're thinking with echoes essentially, right? So there's basically the core gameplay is you're trying to get to the end of this maze, which holds a memory fragment, because you're trying to piece together your character's memories to figure out what the story is, which is cool because those memories are played back in full motion video,
mm-hmm.
Which is a nice little, like, what caught my attention the first time was looking at this game. It's like, okay, that's kind of cool. But the core gameplay is you're using your echoes in order to open and close gates as you're supposed to, in order to progress through the level. It's a pretty cool concept, and it's I don't think it's actually been done like this before, so it was super interesting.
Now, I love the visual style to it. It's got like a very stark contrast of like bright whites with crazy colors. It feels kind of like a Frank Miller comic. Instead of black and white, though, it's like white and neon.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. It's like, because the way everything like sets out is basically you're in this like almost cell looking area and it is super dystopian, like just sheer metal walls with like plexiglass or glass like panes. And what opens up is like you're this weird virtual reality, but not really, might be reality. You're not actually sure what's going on. Because literally, like this, what looks like a metal detector opens up a portal to this world you're navigating to, in order to get your memories back, right? Mm. So it goes from this like stark dystopian gray into like this really like neon colored nightmare fuel, really. And some of the levels, like they use that so you can actually like kind of tell where you're at in the level. Yeah. So you know, it's like, all right, I'm in the neon pink section, which is connected to this pink gate, so I need to make sure I open that wall, so on and so forth. It's a really good way of like setting everything around. It's pretty cool.
Nice, nice. So what is the overall like purpose of the game?
Basically, like I said, you're trying to retrieve your memory fragments in order to paint this story. So the way it plays out in game is each chapter, there's about three or four levels. There's 15 total, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's about three or four per... I think it's three per chapter. And then once you get to the end of those, it plays this video that's essentially a collection of those memories. Like, it's you successfully putting together those fragments into, like, a solid memory and trying to figure out what's going on. Because the only clues you're given is, like, what do you remember? I remember a street and woman in light, and that's all you're given about the game, right? And as you're piecing this together, you're putting together like basically the main character, I think, maybe working in some dystopian type factory that's doing some shady stuff. Like, we haven't heard of that before, right? And
never.
And so, yeah, never. And some connection to a kind of uprising or like a protest of some sort, right? People aren't happy with that, and somehow it's your members are connecting those two things together, but you're not, until you actually finish, you don't exactly know what the story is.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And again, it's all these like little fragments are played out in full motion video, which is actually a pretty cool thing. I like.
Yeah, not many games do FMV anymore, so it's cool to see it making small comebacks here and there.
Oh yeah, no, I definitely dig it. It's for some, yeah, because I mean it harkens back to the time where like that was supposed to be the future of gaming.
Yeah,
but the technology was just awful at the time.
Yeah, and then recently we've had games like The Bunker that were entirely FMV.
Yeah,
and so you have like, and I think this week Late Shift is coming out as well.
Oh, interesting. Yes. I haven't heard Late Shift, but it also reminds me of I remember kickstarting the new Tex Murphy adventure, which is also FMV. I mean, it had some like 3D elements to it, but yeah, it was mostly the stories through FMV, right?
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, it's a nice little comeback. And also like the mechanics of the Echo is interesting because there's points where like there's multiple Echoes. And apparently you're not supposed to crash them together.
What happens if you do?
Well, you're given a video that says like, oh, if an Echo crashes to an, like, basically it's whatever the game refers to as a simulation. So if you run into your own Echo, the simulation crashes out and you're immediately sent back to the beginning. But if an Echo runs to an Echo, all you're given is like essentially a video explaining that like, that they explode for some determined amount of meters. So I don't know if it's like a slow explosion that eventually will in the scenario or what. I don't know. I never found out because the one option I had to do it, I was actually at the end of the level and said, nope, I'm not finding out. Because you just hear this like voiceover. I made it to the end.
Fuck this. I'll find out in another game.
Yeah, pretty much. Nope, not finding out. I mean, it makes you wonder if like if there's a point to do it, because I think this game is I love the fact that they made a early access game that has a definite end and beginning, or beginning and end. Yeah. Like you'd say, we wanted to throw out a complete game for you guys before, you know, saying like, oh yeah, we'll complete that game, you know, whenever down the line. But thanks for buying it now.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So overall, what are your thoughts for $10? What do you think of this
easy,
game?
Easy, dude. Like, this is a fun game for $10. Easy.
Plus, it's like, in early access, and more might come along as well.
Yeah, easy. Like, I mean, so far, it's not too long. But again, like, I don't know how devious the next few puzzles get. Because I'm already at a sticking point where they designed this hallway so perfectly where you're like, oh, I go through this gate, the door opens, and I should have more than enough time to get to the end. And then my Echo trips it right before I hit the door. So now I got to figure out what to do.
Good times.
Yeah. So I imagine the next like four levels I need left are going to be just diabolical.
I hope they are.
Yeah, I'm sure there are. If not, I mean,
I want the next time we talk to you, I'm like, hey, how are the last few levels of that game? Fuck you, Joe. That's what I want. But man,
even with the game like only lasting an hour, it's still a well-paid $10. It's just a solid game, and I want to see more from the studio.
Nice. Well, sounds good. Thank you for covering this one for us. Do you have any final words?
Horror Neon, man, is probably the best thing ever.
Really is.
Yeah.
All right, next game to talk about is called Dragon Sinker, developed by EXE Create, published by Chemco. Oh, God, I said Chemco. You know what that means. Paging Chris Taylor.
Paging Chris Taylor.
Well, Chris Taylor, please report to the front of the podcast. Chris Taylor, how are you doing today?
Hi. Doing great. I think I'm ready for this. Are y'all ready for this?
No one gets that joke but us.
Oh, you should add it to your show.
Well, how about you explain it to us? How about I'll play that as the song before the interview?
Oh, sweet. Okay, so long story short, there's a Japanese shmup called Biometal that was made by Athena, who made like Strike Gunner STG and some other good stuff. And Activision decided to port it over to the United States, and I guess they just had some extra licensed music lying around because they decided to put the Y'all Ready for This song by 2 Unlimited as the title theme to this dark and foreboding shmuppy game, and it's the best worst thing in the world. So
a Super Nintendoized version of the song. Yes.
But Super Nintendo is great for orc hits, so I guess it's a match made in heaven.
Like, how would I credit that in the write-up?
In the write-up?
Yeah, just put, like, Biometal theme song?
I guess so. Biometal U.S. main theme? Anyway,
that's things that have nothing to do with 2 Unlimited or Jock Jams, Dragon Sinker.
Actually, you know, it turns out it's a secret event. The adventure is secretly about finding 2 Unlimited, who have been kidnapped by the jocks.
I don't know. The description here says, join forces with elves and dwarves and slay the evil dragon, Wormvarg, in a retro-style fantasy RPG set out in search of the legendary weapons to free the world from the rule of Wormvarg. It released April 6th on the Nintendo 3DS for $9.99.
Yes.
Chris, is Wormvarg a member of 2 Unlimited?
Well, you know what? He might, yeah. I think the giant dragon does say y'all ready for this at some point. I think he's their call guy.
That's amazing. So,
yeah. Okay, so Dragon Sinker. Well, this is the, what would it be now, the fifth game from the joint Chemco and X-Create, which, as we know, they did Alphadia and Infinite Dunamis and Journey to Crizia and The Unlucky Mage, three of those of which I've already talked about. But this game, they actually decided to not go for that sort of mobile gamey-looking, like, halfway between Super Nintendo and Sony PlayStation look for everything.
Yeah.
And they just went straight back to like a kind of TurboGrafx-16E Dragon Warrior-E look. So it's somewhere between that. It's like enhanced 8-bit. It's not quite 16-bit, not quite... It's not quite a quaint-looking game, but I'd say it's probably a step above like Dragon Fantasy.
Ah, all right.
Yeah, and in presentation, soundtrack is glorious. It's very... I think it's got some FM synths in there and just some good old throwback, you know, chirpity chirps. And chirpity whoever...
Chirp, 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 chirp.
I don't know. There you go. And it plays 2 Unlimited is the title screen. That's the best part. But no. So, like, I don't know who they got as their composer this time around, if it's the same person that did the other X-Create games, but whoever it is, they are suited for 8-bit, because this is one of my favorite soundtracks that they've put out so far. But the actual meat of the game is that basically instead of the usual, you know, you play a fish out of water sort of character, like, you know, wandering around, learning about this world and, you know, doing side quests and such, it's got that, but instead you're actually part of the world to begin with. You're the prince of the human realm, who decides, for whatever reason, to take a couple of nights in level 1 and go and fight the final boss, and that turns out to be ill-advised. And so you wind up losing, like, your best friend, and then your other mentor sort of partner becomes your first, like, actual teammate in this game. And by the way, I have to add in that Wormvarg himself... who you get to see, you know, he's a big scary dragon. He talks in a font that is randomly capitalized, and that reminded me of Zanga, of all things.
Oh, God.
If you remember ancient social networks where people would update things and, like, every other letter would be capitalized? Like AOL profiles and stuff?
Oh, I fucking hated that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the final boss in Dragon Sinker apparently is from the 90s internet, and he is a teenage girl.
So what you're saying is this game is a deny it.
No, not at all, actually.
Before we start recording anything, we've been chatting online a bit, and I know you have been saying continuous good things about this game. Like, you've been so excited to come talk about this one.
Yes, I am, because I'm very excited that this kind of RPG is, like, what Kemco and X-Create's, like, partnership has started to bring forth. Like, in a sense, in going backwards, it feels like they've gone, like, 10 steps forward. Because the game looks, like, they minimize the storyline to where there's still quite a lot of dialogue, and there's character development. One of the first people you meet is actually the, I don't want to give away too much, but it's a lady from the Elven district. That is to say, the part of the world where the elves live. And you get to know her and her, like, her partner as well. And you just wind up actually collecting a lot of partners. I've currently got, like, I think 13 or 14 at the moment.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So the game utilizes the job system, which, you know, like in your Final Fantasies and stuff like that. But the way they do it is they introduce a character that you can optionally leave behind. But if you want to complete the sub-quest that they give you, then you get them in your party and you gain that that job that your other partners can then actually change to. So your partners can change jobs, whereas your main... three characters, which is an elf, the human character, and then the elf lady, and then another dwarf. Those are your three mains, and they actually can't change their job. What happens is when any of your characters hits level 10 in their job, in their job levels, it gives you an item that allows you to add a permanent skill to your heroes, which might even affect their entire team. And then, the whole thing about this game is that it gives you multiple teams that you can switch behind even in the middle of a battle, and depending on how you have the team set up is actually how their stats are going to be aligned. What kind of immunities and what kind of strengths they're all going to have is based on the hero and whatever parameters you might have set up. So it has a really complex and rich like team battle system that you probably have to use in harder battles, but for the most part you can just choose who you like and like just, you know, go, you know, move on. Yeah. And it's got the modern Pokemon style of everybody gains levels. Like, you don't have to put everyone in your party or switch.
Thank God.
Yeah, it's got XP distribution. Like, the thing I love about this game the most is that it does so many things right, while still maintaining this facade of being an old-fashioned game.
Is there anything it does wrong?
You see, that's the thing. I don't think so. Like, the only thing so far is that, you know, I'm like 10 hours into it, and I'm still waiting for something to come up where I'm like, oh, that's no good. Like, even if I find the game is getting a little bit easier, like, it has two other difficulty settings. Like, you can put it in extreme mode and have it, you know, eat your lunch every time. Or keep it on normal, which is basically easy mode, because, you know, normal is easy now.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, some things that it does, I was talking about dialogue earlier, you can do the thing that you can do in a lot of the X-Create games, and that's if you happen to skip past a point of dialogue where you're like, oh, crap, I was reading that, and I pushed the button too fast, just push the L button, it'll show you the last, like, 10 things that were said.
Nice.
Yeah, and yeah,
I like when games keep a log of what was said, because sometimes you're trying to like make all the text show up, but you accidentally hit it like when all of it was about to show up and it just skips the window.
Yeah, so they have that, and that's really good. Talk about sequence breaking. So they have this system where So games you usually grind in order to get, like, job points and experience points. I definitely ground a lot in, like, the Dragon Quest VII, which I'm still playing through. I think I've been playing through it as long as it's been out. but I keep getting distracted by all these other new RPGs, such as Dragon Sinker. But anyways, so what I like when a game has grinding and when it has like a system for character growth, I like for characters to grow in more than one way, and I like for battles to pay off in more than one way. And Dragon Sinker, like, every battle pays off in like five different ways. So you get your experience points, you get your job points, which are counted separately. You get your gold, and then you can also get items really easily. Like, enemies have a really insane drop rate. And also you can introduce stealing into your party early on, which is always a bonus for me. I love item stealing as a thing in games.
I like when games have a mug option, so you get to steal and do an attack.
Ah, yeah. And I think it does have that. But then it has another system that is called DRP. And since it doesn't explicitly tell you what DRP means, I just call it derp. So, occasionally, I'll get to that anyway. There's some items that if you collect like 25 of them, you can get a stat increase item that permanently increases your stat. So that's another droppable that's like kind of random. And depending on how strong the battle is how strong the crystal is the item. You can get small, medium, large crystals, and
I know.
And you can trade them in each of the three main kingdoms, the human, elf, and dwarf kingdoms, for, like, you know, the large ones will give you, like, a big-time stat boost option. And you get to choose which stat you want to boost. And that's really cool. So anyways, but the thing is, dirt points are the best. Because you randomly get 5 dirt points, and once you hit 100 of them, then you can play the lottery. So the game has a lottery. And I, twice now I got, like, the cool thing about the lottery is that it's a guaranteed win. So there's no way to lose it. You just might wind up with a not as good item as you wanted to. And I mean, it usually took me about 15 to 20 minutes to get 100 derps. And once I derped my way into a lottery ticket, the first thing I won was an orange tabby, like a cat, named Sylvester. And Sylvester is actually a party member.
Oh, God. And,
yeah, and he's a thief type, and he's so OP. He can hit, like, everything, like, super hard, and he can steal items, and he has, like, all the best, like all these great moves and stuff. And just for playing the lottery, I won him. And apparently you can also win an owl and another critter. So you can actually win party members, like, through the lottery, and also you can win, like, really high-end armor. You can win items that increase stats by, like, 30 each. It's just, like, game-breaking stuff. Like, you can win the lottery and actually change the course of the game.
That's hilarious. I don't think you've told me one, like, even kind of boring or negative thing about this game. So I'm almost, hesitant to ask if you have a, like, what's the general verdict for this? Because I think I know already.
Yeah, I'd say that, like, basically, this is taking everything they've been... Like, all these mechanics exist in the other games in certain ways. Like, you're, you know, an unlucky mage and, you know, Infinite Dunamis and Journey to Crizia. The thing that Dragon Sinker does so well, besides incorporating all of that, is that it feels so much more like something that's, you know, old and familiar and kind of classier, in a sense. Like, the characters aren't these, like... overdrawn anime characters. There's no cutscenes like with improved graphics. They are always going to be the blocky, you know, digital 8-bit guys. And in that sense, it's like in going backwards like that, they've come up with characters that are a lot more compelling, gameplay that's actually smoother. Because I mentioned before in the other games that the frame rate kind of bothered me.
Yeah.
It's a little choppy. This game has not a single chop. It is very smooth. Yeah. So you're playing through it, and it feels like, you know, like there's a little bit of even a little bit of that Mode 7 looking stretching and scaling going on, because sometimes enemies are extra strong, and the way they make this enemies extra strong is they literally just make them bigger and they stretch out the pixels and everything.
That's awesome.
So like a mighty giant mantis is going to take up like a quarter of the battlefield, but it'll just be these stretched out blocky looking pixels. And it's just so charming in that way that, I don't know, I would pick this over any other Kemco X Create game. So it's definitely a buy it.
Awesome. Sounds good. I think you have convinced me to pick it up myself. I was kind of interested to begin with, but given everything you've told me, I think I need to go out and grab a Nintendo card this week.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, and, you know, another thing that I like about it, and then I'll stop praising it so much. But so I really like Dragon Fantasy. I really like that Dragon Fantasy is the kind of parody, satire, 8-bit RPG that I always wanted to actually write myself as a kid. So I was always like, what if this was like funny? You know, when I would play, like intentionally funny, when I would play through like Final Fantasy IV and stuff.
Yeah.
And while I like that Dragon Fantasy is hilarious, and it is, what I really appreciate about Dragon Sinker is that it has genuinely funny moments in it, and there is some, like, there's some great bits of dialogue in it and great exchanges in it, but the tone of the game overall is very, like, it's pretty serious, you know, it's serious business. Like, you have to, you know, you don't feel like the weight of the world like in a really overly serious game, but at the same time you're like, you don't feel like the game is sort of saying, oh, we're 8-bit, isn't that wacky? They're just like, no, this is a serious story that we're telling through an 8-bit medium.
Mm.
Even so though we are having
it's
fun.
It's still a serious game, but it has its moments of humor and levity that brings it down to earth.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Sylvester the Orange Cat has like a pixelated butthole.
Derp points.
And you have derp points. But at the same time, you know, you are going after a dragon. It does, the exchanges do sort of tell an interesting story about, with really complex reasons as to why elves hate humans and why they both, like, how they treat dwarves and, like, all this other stuff, just how the races intermix or don't. And you kind of get to see the characters work through that a little bit. Plus, most of the dialogue branches end up with you being able to optionally say something that's supportive of one character over another. And the game even tells you at the very beginning that all of those dialogue branches have no effect on the actual game. That's purely your choice and how you want to approach something.
Nice.
So if the elf girl is being like really bratty about something, which she frequently is, you can either totally shoot her down with some awesome, with an awesome like comeback, or you can be supportive of her and maybe even flirtatious, and she'll just respond in the moment. But then it doesn't change the other moments. It's not like BioWare where you're like building up relationship points or anything like that. Unless you are, I don't know. This game's awesome, so maybe there's something else in there to surprise me with.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's Dragon Sync. If that happens and everything you've done actually leads to something completely different, you're going to have to let us know.
Oh, yeah, I'll definitely let you know.
So any final words to wrap up this review?
Kemco and XCreate, please keep making games and please keep putting them on the 3DS because I am eating this stuff up. I am definitely going to beat Dragon Sinker before I move on to anything else, so... And also, to anybody else who's listening, please catch my stream on Twitch at /LiarExaggerate.
All right, and next game to talk about... Oh, Pernell, welcome back.
Hey! You won't believe the adventure I had out there, man!
How was that distraction that distracted you?
It was violent and deadly.
Yay!
So, I need a doctor!
So as I was saying, next game to talk about, we actually have a two-pack... of Arcade Archives titles. Remember when you were on and we covered 8 of these together?
That was a great time. It takes me way back to 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago, huh? Anyway, we have 2 more to talk about. Let us start with Arcade Archives Neo Geo Galaxy Fight Universal Warriors. Console release, developed and published by Hamster, released April 6th on Xbox One for $7.99. Galaxy Fight Universal Warriors is a fighting game released by Sunsoft in 1995. In the world that was destroyed by these destructors of the universe, 8 warriors challenge to fight each other's speculation. No idea what that means. Please enjoy the worldview of SF Touch and the fight full of speed.
That English was on point.
I love it. I love it so much. It makes it feel more authentically like 90s Japanese import.
I guess I can see that. Yeah, like, welcome to the adventure of game. You're happy as welcome. Like, I finally, someone understands what I want in a game.
Pretty much. Anyway, as I'm sure you noticed, this one is developed by Sunsoft, not SNK. This is a one-on-one fighting game, and despite the fact that it is Sunsoft instead of SNK, it still runs into the biggest problem that we have had with all of the one-on-one fighting games on these Neo Geo releases.
That they're not Waku Waku 7?
Close, but that they are brutally, unfairly, obscenely difficult. And this is even when I bitch out and put it on, like, because the ACA games, they have 3 different modes. They have a high score mode, which is you play on default settings and it's 1 credit. They have caravan mode, which is default settings, 1 credit, but also a 5-minute time limit to see how far you could go. And then they have the standard mode in either English or Japanese version that, you know, you can go in and dick around with the dip switches, so you could like change the difficulty, you could change the number of lives you have in fighting games, you could change the timer. In more action arcade games, you could change like how frequently you could earn a new life or stuff like that. Some of the games you could even like toggle the blood display or like the demo that plays before it, like if attract mode on an arcade machine, you could toggle that shit.
They give you a lot of options, clearly.
Yeah, and even on level 1 difficulty, the easiest difficulty, so many of these Neo Geo fighting games have been just bullshit difficult, like unfairly difficult. Like
brutacular.
Like, I know I'm not the greatest fighting fan out there, like the fighting gamer out there, but I feel I can, you know, decently hold my own in matches of Street Fighter or Marvel versus Capcom or Mortal Kombat. I don't need to always resort to button mashing, although sometimes it's fun, but like I can hold my own. I can do okay enough in like the beginner's bracket of a tournament or something.
Button mashing is all I'm good for, but it gets the job done. So I'm no fronter.
One of the I guess features of this game is that every time you continue, the game gives you a point. So it could kind of be like a badge of honor. If you beat the game and your high score ends in like a 0 or a 1, something like that, because it shows that, hey, either I never continued or I only continued once or something like that. By the time I gave up playing this game, I was on the second fight in the game. Second. And my score ended in a 13.
Holy lucky 13. Digging it down.
I figured that was good enough. It was, I believe, 5 when I beat the first guy.
Oh, man.
It is just...
Did you use, like, one of the hulking slow characters? Did you pick, like, a speedy chip damage character?
I tried a bunch of them. It seemed like no matter what character I would pick, it wouldn't work for me. Like, no matter what I did, the computer was always faster or more accurate, or they could magically block everything I do and then immediately fire off a counterattack to wreck me. There would be times where I would play a character, or I would play an opponent, and he would wreck me, and then I would pick him to see how well he played, because, you know, this guy had all these attacks that would take, like, big chunks of my life away. And I would let's use see them.
How he fares. Like, how, let's see how he fares against himself!
And I would just get wrecked, even still. I couldn't do anything. I was just terrible, which is a shame because the game is a gorgeous looking game. It has a really cool like zooming in and out effect, kind of like the original arcade Killer Instinct, where the further you would get away from each other, the further the camera would zoom out. So it had a nice dynamic zooming effect based on, you know, the distance that you're away from your opponent in the game. Good visuals, interesting sound effects, and had some voice clips in there and everything. The biggest issue is, Jesus, that fucking difficulty.
I think it's kind of funny you mention that too, because like I'm watching the game on Xbox right now, because I tend to do that sometimes when I'm doing reviews with the show, and I think it's funny, there's 4 videos on the preview section. 2 of them are the same 2 characters fighting each other, and on the first video, the one character is getting the... I mean, they're having a pretty tight match, but the left character is getting the tar kicked out of him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately ends up winning through timeout. The other clip, on the other hand, is a perfect win by the person on the left, and all she's doing is jumping and kicking straight in the air, jumping straight up and kicking. And the guy, just, the computer, just keeps running into it over and over again. So it's almost like maybe the person got stuck in like a weird pattern, and the person realized it and just went to town on it. But it actually makes me bring up about a good chuckle, which you mentioned earlier about how hard the game is. Like, this guy just jumps straight up and kicks, and the job is done.
I'm sure that there are ways that you can just completely cheese the opponent and win matches, either by like chipping them and then timing out, or just finding a way to do the same move over and over that they just walk into. But then that's not playing the game. It's, you know, that's not playing the game the way it's intended to be played.
That's Blaster Master pausing with the grenade. That's not a challenge. That's just stupid.
Yeah, as it stands, as much as I enjoy Galaxy Fight, I love the unique visuals and the... I love seeing a game that's from someone other than SNK in this collection. This is all going to come down to whether you've played the other fighting games in the series, and A... if you were able to manage the difficulty, then this is another one that you're going to want to pick up and enjoy. If you haven't been able to manage the difficulty, you're going to want to avoid this one like the plague, because this is another one that will kick your fucking face in. If you haven't played any of the other fighting games in the ACA series, I would either go with World Heroes or King of Fighters 95, because both of those were infinitely easier to get into.
If you want to fight as a giant cat girl with big mittens against a guy who looks like a reject of MC Hammer named G. Dunn, buy this game. I'm sitting here watching this match, and this is hysterical. It literally is MC Hammer fighting a bunny girl. Or yeah. A bunny slash cat girl. I don't know which of the two it is.
There's some crazy fucking characters in the game, that's for sure.
That's what I guess what you get when you call for a galaxy fight. You get hip-hop brawlers versus kitty cat callers. I don't know what to make of this. This is ridiculous.
Oh, man. Anyway, we do have a second ACA game to talk about, and this one I have a much better impression of. This is called Sengoku 2. You might remember we covered the first Sengoku during that 8-game marathon we did. Console release, developed and published by Hamster, released April 13th on Xbox One for $7.99. Sengoku 2 is a side-scrolling action game released by SNK in 1993. Take on the role of a warrior summoned by a shrine princess and fight over various historical periods in order to defeat the Dark Monarch. Players can enjoy new tactical features such as charge attacks and defensive abilities. This is another 2D side-scrolling brawler-style game. The original Sengoku, we really, both of us enjoyed that one as a, you know, brawler, a lot like, you know, Streets of Rage or Double Dragon, Final Fight, in that same vein. The big difference here is this one just feels a lot more refined overall. The three different things that you could transform into in the first game that you had to earn them as you went through. In this game, you have access to all of them right off the bat.
Oh, that's nice and convenient.
Yeah, so you're not stuck only getting that dog to start and like, why the fuck do I have this stupid thing?
That dog was abysmal too, which makes me remember something, by the way. So, in the previous game, one of the big complaints that I had was that if you go into the process of doing a transformation, you were left vulnerable sometimes. The enemy could get cheap shots on you while you were going through the transformation. Did they remedy that for the sequel?
I honestly don't know. Anytime that I would do the transformation to either, like, they have a ninja or, like, a big... I think he, like, wields a giant pipe or something. And then, of course, the dog again. Anytime I would do that would be kind of in between waves of enemies. I never really tried it in the heat of the battle. But I kind of recall when I would use it, my character would, like, disappear into a puff of smoke and there would just be a plume of smoke there. So it's possible that you can't get hit during a transformation, but I cannot confirm.
Well, on the positive, I guess if you never experienced it, maybe that means it's gone.
Maybe.
Fingers crossed. But
or I just didn't pick shitty times to try changing my character.
Good call. I was just trying to get strategic about, like, hey, maybe you have to, maybe certain guys are strong against certain transformations and vice versa, you know?
Oh, it's possible. But again, I didn't try it. I would just do it in between waves of enemies. Speaking of, similar to the first game, in this game, you would have, you know, fight a handful of enemies, move forward, fight a couple more enemies. They would have the random teleport you out into some weird other, like you're fighting in the clouds or weird arena that you just fight in, and then you teleport out of there back to the original area. Very similar in this game. They also have random horse riding segments that it's only moving left or right. There's no depth to it. You'll have enemies that appear in the plane in front of you and then in the plane behind you, and your two different attacks. Visually, it looks like they attack forward and backward, but they would hit either side anyway, so it might have just been an aesthetics kind of deal.
So is this similar to how, I guess, what was the game? Shinobi 3 did it? Because there's a horse riding segment in that, too.
In that one, you kind of like had to like do jumps and shit, didn't you?
Yeah, you had to jump over like hurdles, and so funny enough, your horse could jump and kick things, which was just hilarious. It was the best attack to do in the entire stage was jump kick with your horse.
That's amazing. No, unfortunately, in this, it's more of just like enemies show up and you fight them, and then you move on. They're brief sections. I think they're thrown in there just to kind of like change things up and keep things looking different, but they just feel like another set of arena fights where you just kill the enemies and then you move on.
Ah, okay. Well, I guess it's not so bad. Like you said, it's a good change of pace. Doesn't have to be revolutionary or anything, especially considering the time it came out originally.
One of the cool additions to the game is that across the four stages of the game, they're all in different time periods. So, like, one of the original stages, you might be in, like, a feudal Japan kind of area. And then in another one, you'll be in, like, modern day, well, 1990s modern day New York City, fighting around tourists who are running away from you. Like, oh my God, where did this, you know, ancient ninja skeleton warrior teleport in from? Let me run the fuck out of here.
Meanwhile, in 2017, when this here was recorded, they would, if you teleported down, they'd be like, eh, it's got nothing on the giant rats we've got in the city right now. Shit.
True.
This one won't steal our pizza.
But yeah, it was neat to see different locales and different areas in the game, and it kept things looking fresh and looking different. One of the benefits to this game is it is not ridiculously difficult. Achievement Hunters, this one could probably be finished within a couple of hours, probably hour and a half, 2 hours, depending on how well you do with the high score in the caravan modes. But it's not something where, you know, like Universal Warriors, Galaxy Fight Universal Warriors, you're just going to get frustrated with and die and then get pissed off. This is an enjoyable game. It is long enough that you could sit down and finish it in a setting. And I mean, like, finish the actual game, not the achievements. I can't judge everything on just achievements here. But it's a game that you could sit down, finish it in a setting, and then go back and play it again, because it was just really fun. For $8, I got to give this one another buy it. And I have my fingers crossed that we see Sengoku 3 show up in the future as well.
Now, unfortunately, of course, unlike Galaxy Fight, you can't transform into G-Dun and take care of business. But I guess the players will have to make do with what they've got.
Listen, just be happy with what you get in this game.
But I do have to ask, because this factors into just certain people's play styles and habits. So, Sengoku 2, you've established, is a pretty polished version of the game, and it's much better than, say, the first game was, as far as, like, playability and such. Do you believe that players should just jump to this one and get the refined play experience, or should they bother going and buying both Sengoku 1 and Sengoku 2?
I'd get them both, because they're both solid. It's tough to recommend one over the other, because if you say, oh, start with Sengoku 2 and then you pick up Sengoku 1, you might be underwhelmed, given that it's an earlier game and it's, you know, not as polished, or there's differences to it that you're just like, I would
do exactly that, by the way. I go, I was going to buy it, but
so yeah, if you don't have the first one, I would play the first one first and then get this one, but they're both worth buying. I know when we covered the first one, we gave it a buy it rating, and this one is also a buy it rating, so buy them both.
Double buy it.
Yeah. Final game to talk about is called Crawl. I know you've been excited about this one. This one's
divided.
Can I buy it? Get the information out first.
I guess so. Go ahead. Do what you have to do.
Crawl, developed and published by Powerhoof, released April 11th on Xbox One and PS4 for $14.99, was also available on Steam prior to that in early access. Crawl is the dungeon crawler where you control the monsters. As a malicious spirit, you hunt a hero as he explores the dungeons, possessing cruel traps and horrid beasts in an effort to slay him. Succeed, and you will regain your mortal form. Now you are the hero, and it's your turn to crawl. Bring some friends to add local multiplayer mayhem to the mix as you race to gain enough XP and loot to face them all as they possess the limbs of the hulking final boss. Longtime listeners of the show, and by longtime I mean this week, would know that we talked with the guys from Powerhoof on our last episode, and I absolutely loved the game in the time I played with it. Purnell, you actually were interested in this game because you had friends visiting, And I figured, who better to give this game an official review than someone who has actual real-life friends to play with. So what happened when you played this game?
Oh, it's my turn now? Buy it!
God damn it.
Buy it! Oh, I guess I should do my thing and ask you to give a review, too. This game was a absurd amount of fun. Like, when I knew nothing about this game except for the fact that a friend didn't recommend it because he didn't know much about it either. He just suggested it. And I figured, why not? We should do something fun with it. And then when you offered it, it was a perfect time scenario. Perfectly timed scenario. So, this game, the way it starts out is you are locked in a... Well, before I even get into that, you have to input your name. And then you have to choose a god of worship. Like a demon god that you worship. And this determines some things which I will get into later. So after you've done those things, the game starts out with you and all the other players locked in a prison cell and a narrator that sounds suspiciously a lot like Mark Hamill. It makes this amazing that it's not. Apparently it's some guy whose last name is Vaughn, which was amazing because my last name is that too. And there was a moment on one of the levels that was actually called The Eyes of Vaughn with the right spelling and everything. And I was like, this is my floor, bitches. This is my floor. But I digress. So after the narrator is done talking, you are then tasked with killing your friends, like immediately. It's a battle to the death, one hit kills. The surviving player emerges as the hero. All dead players emerge as angry wraiths, cursed to die again and again in a dungeon filled with yellow piss balls and interesting blocky graphics.
Piss balls.
Oh, there's some piss balls in that game. We had like a whole joke about it at one point. But so as you go from room to room, the goal is to, as the hero, level up to level 10 by killing monsters and activating a portal, which allows you to get to exit the dungeon. So I want to go into a little bit more. So the things you have to kill to level up are actually your friends or your former friends, because as raving, angry spirits, they can possess objects in the dungeon to attack you. They can actually activate pentagrams lying on the ground to spawn monsters determined by the god that you chose to worship at the beginning of the game. You get three different kinds, and you can summon them. It typically is like a randomized thing, so you can't like make one super powerful demon and just constantly use it. It randomizes it between your three, and you have to fight with it. Every time the hero kills a monster, they get experience points. Every time the hero levels up, all of the monsters get wrath points, which they can use to level up their demons to get further, increasingly powerful demons, which would be the difference between the typical dungeon crawl. The further down you go, the stronger the monsters get. Well, that's how they make sense of that, because the players can level up their monsters. And if a monster ultimately ends up killing one of the heroes, well, then that monster ghost becomes the new hero, and then the hero becomes a new monster, and he gets to try to kill the hero. So it's a lot of back and forth, a lot of demonic collusion to kill the hero, and then you get pissed off when your friend who you thought was in on it with you the entire time because you're best friends, and everything was planned out from the start, snipes the kill, and comes back leaving you wondering what the hell you did wrong with your life. He did that to me multiple times, and I hated it. I hated it so much I wanted to play again. So as you also play through these dungeons, you can find money as well. And the money can be used by the hero player to activate purchases at the store that exists on each floor. The wraith, on the other hand, get to find ectoplasm, which they can stock up. And for every filled ectoplasm bar, they get to spawn one slime, which is a pretty pathetic monster, I'll admit. Mm-hmm. But it has its uses. If you come across a room, for example, that may look like it's got a lot of cool traps in it but no monsters, you can spawn an ectoplasm, which will in turn lock all the exits to the room, forcing the hero to find it and kill it before he can move on, while you start spawning in the traps to try to kill him, install for time. So it's pretty fun. You can use it in some pretty creative ways just to piss the guy off. It's a blast to do it. So you've been playing the game for a while. You've been leveling up your monsters. The hero's been leveling up. And unfortunately for everyone but the hero, he is now level 10. He's ready to get the fuck out of Dodge. The portal's right there. So he steps on it. He summons the gate. And he steps through. And you would originally think that the game is over. But you'd be wrong. Because now the hero has to engage in the dreaded boss fight. I'm not sure how many bosses this game has. But we fought at least three. And it was freaking funny. As you walk in the room, there's a fun animation that takes place for each individual boss. My favorite still being the chicken god, who rips his own heart out and stuffs it in something's mouth. And he becomes like this weird, super powerful guy. But the hero has to fight the boss and kill it, while the Wraith characters can possess different appendages of the boss and use them to coordinate attacks to screw the hero over. If the hero should lose, he gets ejected back into the dungeon, and he has to look for another portal to try again, assuming he survives that long. And you only get three tries. For every try, you use one of them up, and on the last try, the final hero who makes an attempt that fails immediately loses the game. Just like that. It's over.
Nice.
So it's kind of sucky to be the one hero who's like, okay, I made the last shot. I'm going to make this happen to you. He's like, well, you just immediately lost the game. You suck. But I think at the same time, this is the kind of game where, like, if you're really into this game playing it to be pissed off if you lost to the final boss, you're playing the wrong game and you're missing the entire freaking point.
Yeah.
This game is hysterical. I can't, this is this year's Overcooked for me. And for those who don't know, Overcooked was pretty much my favorite multiplayer game of last year. Without question.
Yeah, that was a pretty awesome game.
It really is. And I know some people, but they might be going filthy casual or some crap. No, dude, I play a lot of freaking games, which just goes to show you how a game that sells for $15 online is a more fun multiplayer experience than most $60 games I was buying last year. And this game is following suit to that majesty. I cannot recommend this game more to anybody. Like, it's worth every damn penny. I would have bought this game if I had to. The fact that I got it for free and was able to review it and tell other people they need to buy it today, that's just icing on the cake. Like, I rambled a lot. Can you think of any particular questions about the game you might have that I could, you know, kind of elaborate on?
The only thing I could think of is how friggin' awesome was it playing with actual people? Because I'm jealous.
Oh, God, it was so good. It was so good. Like, I did try single player after they finally had to go home because I wanted one more hit. I wanted to hook it to my veins, man. And for the record, I think that is probably the only way any player with competent human friends playing the game will ever manage to beat a boss is by playing it alone. Because the computer can't work together vocally to screw you. Whereas with humans, they know how to exploit certain situations. Like, if you don't have a throwing weapon and the boss is standing next to, like, one particular object that can just get slammed into you, what do you think a human player is going to do? He's going to just watch your ass and wait. He's going to come over there. So, I mean, it changes the game up quite a bit. But with that said, if you don't have anyone to play it with, they did a pretty good job of making the game still fun to play alone.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's not going to match up the trash-talking friends and hitting them with a broken bottle or anything like that. But what are you going to do, right? We have our moments. And trust me, it's a rarity that I get that kind of situation going too. So if I want to get my crawl fixed, I'm going to be hitting the single player cave or caverns again myself. So
At least you have the option to play with actual friends, because I don't have that. And I know a lot of people have asked about online for the game. And if you yourself are wondering about that, you should go back and listen to our last episode with the team from Powerhoof, where they discussed why online isn't in the game, if it's possible for a future release, and tons of other stuff. So, Purnell, I think you should probably check out that episode.
I think I'm going to have to, man, because if only I can just to say thank you, Powerhoof, for releasing this awesome freaking game, because it's worth pointing out here. I don't want to forget to mention it. Most games these day and age are derived from games that came before. There's no denying that. However, even with that in mind, I feel like there's still room for new gameplay experiences that companies are not attempting to do. Heck, gameplay experiences that are rarely utilized that come up in later years still technically feel new because of how rarely they are used. This game to me, is something that should have existed when the Wii U was brand new. It was one of the games that I wanted to happen when that came out, as like, you know, heroes on the TV, Dungeon Master on the touchpad, just trying to screw the heroes over, right? It makes sense. The design was there, but no one made use of it. Here we get Crawl on a console, and I think it was on PC before this, and lo and behold, even without a touchscreen, they gave you the whole sense of take a dungeon crawler, but give it multiplayer mayhem in the form of your friends being the monsters, and a constant tug of war to remain the hero throughout. These guys reached into the primordial ooze of game creatorship and pulled out a fucking gem, and they deserve all the credit they deserve to get for it, because more companies need to take a stand for that. I'm tired of yearly sequel-rich blitz when there's still stuff like this available to be done. And for $13 damn, no less, $13 or $14, it's good. And worth pointing out, in stills, there are people that may look at the art and go, meh, this isn't very appealing. Heck, I was one of those people. When the stills were coming up, I didn't think it was a very entertaining-looking game. But in motion, while it's in function, it looks great. I like the way the game looks. I like the way it plays, and it suits it well. It is not just a it's not just like a crapshoot. It's done well.
It is a gorgeous game.
Mm-hmm. But. Very much so.
But yeah, I'm going to guess that you like the game just a bit.
Nah, it's pretty stupid. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody.
Oh, man. On that note, I guess that is it with the reviews for the week. So, Pernell, thank you for hanging out and keeping me company for this one.
Not a problem. Thank you for having me. I'm all about it.
Music this week, besides the Chris Taylor-approved intermission, is going to be from the band Moira Effect, or Moira... God damn it.
Moray Effect?
Moray?
Like Moray Eel?
Yes. Moray Eel Effect. Music from them, and then hang around for their interview, which will be up after the break. Pernell, do you have any final words to end the episode?
Bye, Crawl!
Just getting kind of going with the publicity side of our stuff here. So
nice. Well, hopefully this will be a good start for you guys.
Well, yeah, we really appreciate you taking the time to get us out there.
Okay, we got a guest star he loves to just bother me when I'm interviewing.
Aww.
Okay.
All right, welcome back, everyone. I am joined by two guests at this time, Scott and Drew of the band. Is it Moira Effect?
Moray Effect.
Moray Effect.
Yeah, we get that a lot.
It's Amore.
Yeah,
something like that.
So Scott Wells and Drew, based on your email, Drew B-Rad E. Dizzle.
Ederly, it works. That's my just managing my online presence a little bit.
B-Rad E. Dizzle. That's a good one. That might be the most unique name I have sitting in my email inbox right now.
Well, I figure if people know me, they'll recognize who it is. But if they don't know me, then I can kind of recognize who's emailed me on purpose and who is not.
Makes sense.
B-Rad.
Yes.
So, Moray Effect, tell us about this band. What are you guys doing? I know I first heard of you guys through the DuckTales theme that you just put out. Are you guys kind of new to the video game scene? I've seen that you've put out an album already, but again, I'm not super familiar with you guys. So tell me, who the hell are you?
Okay, you want me to tell you? Okay, yeah, we're pretty new to the video game scene, but we are far from new. We've been around since 1999, with maybe a 10-plus year hiatus in there. Yeah, we were high school buddies, just jamming in the garage. Not really that serious. We maybe played a couple of shows ever. So if you caught one of those live performances, lucky you. We kind of got back together a few years ago at Justin's wedding. And we were playing just for the wedding because the bride requested it. But it felt really good to be back. So Drew and I decided to take on recording the songs that we wrote back in high school, and that was our first album release. Since then, we've done some cover songs, and we just kind of went in the direction of video game covers, mostly because of the Dwelling in Duels, and we're both huge nerds, man. We love video game music.
I love Dwelling in Duels.
Yeah, I've been following Dwelling in Duels for, I guess, a decade now, almost.
Wow.
Yeah, a little side note, the bride at the wedding we got together, that was our drummer, and his wife got married at that wedding, and she had actually requested us to play the theme music from Halo. So we threw something together that for her for that. So that's kind of cool. But yeah, I myself personally, I've been following video game music and remixes in particular for a long time. And you know, I threw in a couple Dwelling of Duels entries over the years. But in the last couple of years, me and Scott have been putting together, video game remixes that are a little higher caliber than what I did back in the day, and it's just a little more fun when you're working together with somebody you've had all this musical history with. So it's been really fun.
Nice. It's cool. I like the story of playing Halo at the wedding. You guys would probably get a kick out of the fact that the music at my wedding was 100% from the 1-Ups.
Nice. Yeah, I've actually got one of their albums upstairs, with the Chrono Trigger, Chrono Cross, I believe, compilation album.
Chronotorious from the Bad Dudes?
Yeah, there's a little jazzy number there. at my wedding, my exit theme for the musical selection for the exit theme was the main theme from Chrono Trigger.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome. What about you, Scott? Any good wedding music?
No, I went out with Dave Matthews, so no VGM at my wedding that I remember.
You nerd.
I know.
The hell's your problem?
Not that I shunned the video game industry, but I went the rock and roll route with, standard rock tunes. And I can't believe that I hadn't embraced the video game side of music, and now I am, and I'm loving it.
I think my favorite part of my wedding with the music was the fact that all the older people there, all the older family, had no clue what the hell they were dancing to. They're just, this is really nice, jazzy, funky music. These guys are really talented.
I had a couple of buddies come up to me after the wedding. They're like, hey, that was cool, the Chrono Trigger music. But don't name your kids after any video game characters. That's only cool for you, okay? So I was like, I'll keep that in mind.
Do you have a kid named Sephiroth yet?
Yeah, well, I'm working on that right now.
That's a good point. I'm curious if I have kids, like, yeah, this is my buddy, except Sephiroth, or I can't think of a better example right now.
his daughter Aerith.
Yeah, they right. They really wanted to name my daughter Aerith for yeah. a while. Not too
bad. I don't know. You know what? I'm still old school. I still believe her name is Aerith. I don't care what anybody says. I think it sounds like you got a lisp if you say Aerith. And the original U.S. release said Aerith, so I'm sticking with Aerith.
Nice. That's the way to do it, man. That's yeah. It's like people still try to tell me that, oh, no, his name is Ryu in Street Fighter. No. Fuck you. No. I grew up with yeah. Ryu.
Exactly.
You're not going to tell me how to live my life.
Right. It's Bimmy and Jimmy, right? Mm-hmm. The Double Dragon.
Bimmy and Jimmy. Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, so your first album, I'm guessing, not video game related?
Not at all. Yeah, just straight up garage rock, crap we wrote back in high school. We just wanted to make it sound good, you know. We always thought it was good, and then we've just taken our skills that we have now and made them the best version of those songs it could be. The major difference is that none of us sang back then. And so on this album, we actually put lyrics and vocals on it. So it was pretty good.
Nice.
And yeah, I'd always thought we had really good music that we had, you know, written back in the day. We never had the equipment or the skill or, you know, the time to really get it down in a kind of almost, you know, a good sounding way. So I still think we've written some good music that people enjoy. I shared it with some of my friends, and they kind of, one comment I got is like, man, this kind of taking me back to kind of some like late 90s rock. And like, well, these songs are from the late 90s, so there you go.
We still makes have sense. The crappy, grainy little tape recordings if you ever want to hear them.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, you probably just stick with the album version. Yeah. Your recommendation.
Well, whenever one of you guys ODs, that tape will be worth a lot.
Yeah, I'm keeping them. I told my wife where they're at, so, you know, yeah.
So 20 years after you pass, you could re-release those tapes, make a lot of money.
That's the plan. That's really what all this is for.
Oh, man. So what facilitated the change? Like, you put out an album of originals, then you're like, you know what? Fuck it, let's do video game stuff.
It was never a plan. We wanted to do more original stuff. God, what really started it? What was our first cover?
We did that Give Lavos a Chance remix for the Dwelling of Duels Magfest last year.
Which is incredible, by the way. That song is amazing. Oh,
thanks. You know, somebody put on a Daft Punk album in a car one time, and when I was hearing it, I heard the music from Shallow's theme over top of it, and then so I, you know, thought of what would be the lyrics if that was the song, and we just kind of put it together for Dwelling of Duels. You know, it's a very wide genre shift from, you know, our album, but that was our first actual release after the album. You know, it gets a lot of mixed response from people. You know, I think because of the genre shift, the singing, you know, I did most of the vocal tracks for that one, and who I'm trying to sound like, Pharrell Williams, and I'm not Pharrell Williams, and just doing the best I can. So, you know, I think I did all right.
The one comment you got from one of the sheets, the judging sheets that you told me about, it was like, it drones on.
Yeah. You know, it does go on, but that's how the, you know, Daft Punk makes a song that drones on. I can make a song that drones on. It's the same length, so, you know.
The first time I heard that, I'm not sure if it was after MAGFest or if I was at the Dwelling of Duels listening party, because I've gone, like, in and out of those over the years. The first time I heard it, I honestly thought that it was my friend Flick, Chris Serrani, who did that song based on the vocals. So when I...
Huh? I've seen that name before, some remixes.
Yeah, he does a lot of vocal stuff in songs, usually with Aleshon, and then this year he basically narrated that entire Paperboy's Lament or whatever it was.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. Ridiculously awesome that entry this year. I mean, once it started going and I saw it was 20 minutes long, but it kept the interest level and the quality up the whole time. I was like, well, this song's obviously going to win, so I'm not even going to count it. But yeah.
Yeah, some of those guys, they go way too all out for Dwelling of Duels.
Yeah. Yeah, the it's fun to kind of watch the Dwelling of Duels, especially on MAGFest months, get bigger and bigger. Like I said, I've been following it for a long time. So, you know, I think there were some 30 entries this year at MAGFest. So that made for quite, I don't know what time they finally got out of there at the listening party this year, but it was a marathon listening session.
Man, some of the earlier listening parties that they had back when MAGFest was still at the Alexandria Hilton, like, they would have 7-hour listening parties.
Wow.
It's just nuts. The MAGFest month that brings everybody out. Everybody has to be on their A game. Everybody has to compete.
Yeah, and you know, Scott last year, well, that was his first MAGFest, and I've never been until this previous one. So, you know, it was we're going to try to make it an annual thing, getting into at least the MAGFest Dwelling of Duels every year. You know, without compromising anonymity, then, you know, we just want to kind of put that goal for ourselves out there.
That's why for the MAGFest songs, you have to do something completely different than what people would expect from you. Because if it sounds like you, they're going to know it's you, and they'll, you know, they'll be like, well, I know who this is. So,
well, you know, kind of the era we're finding ourselves in is we're putting lyrics to remixes, which isn't that common. You know, the vast majority of remixes are just instrumental, which are great. There's great instrumental remixes out there, but we're kind of finding ourselves finding a niche for ourselves where, you know, we're putting vocals to the remixes to explore the themes of the music a little bit more. And so, you know, that's kind of probably going to make it a little more difficult to stay anonymous as things go on. People start to recognize Scott or my voice. But, you know, I think it's, like I said, not many people are doing it. So we're trying to do something a little different where, you know, kind of attach the themes of the game to kind of maybe the feel of the genre of the music and, you know, explore some of the ideas in lyrics. You know, kind of make something interesting that people want to listen to.
Now, I'm trying to think of some of the other vocal bands out there, and I honestly can't think of many. The biggest is probably the Proto Men, and they really don't do video game covers. They just do inspired by music.
Right. You know, there's some great shows at MAGFest. You know, Bit Brigade obviously put on a great show this year, but you know, they're
nuts. Those guys are insane.
Yeah, yeah, it's they're amazing. But you know, they found a real cool you know, method of performing that nobody really is doing. So it's they put on a great show, but it's, you know, I don't know if it's like a, you know, an introvert thing that maybe a lot of us in the video game remix community or introverts or whatever, but putting yourself out there singing, it does kind of, you know, you're kind of exposed. So, you know, it's pretty, it can be kind of intimidating.
Yeah. Well, you've also got the fact that a lot of VGM is instrumental. So, to do like what we did and throw some original lyrics on top of it, almost sacrilegious. That was even my viewpoint with the DuckTales theme. I was really hesitant. But once it got, you know, positive response, I think now I'm over that, and we can just screw up any song we want. I'm fine with it.
Yeah. So when we were composing the DuckTales song, you know, we threw it together in just a few days because MAGFest was coming up, and I just wrote, you know, I knew we were doing an 80s power ballad for the moon theme, and yeah, so I wrote these just ridiculously kind of dumb, silly, punny lyrics that I figured would perfectly match with an 80s power ballad, but yeah, it might upset some people that are, you know, really attached to the moon theme of DuckTales. So, you know, Scott was really hesitant at first to kind of sing that kind of dumb stuff out, but you know, he finally gave in and laid down an awesome track that
I didn't want to tarnish my fantastic reputation.
I mean, if people didn't lose their minds when Brentel Floss did a DuckTales theme years ago, I think you're in the clear.
Yeah, that's a pretty iconic take on that song for sure.
Good stuff, though. What did you guys place this year with DuckTales?
I think it was like 13th or 14th. Yeah,
out of 712 entries.
Yeah, about like that. Yeah,
that's a pretty good showing overall for a MAGFest month of Dwelling of Duels. That's a damn good showing.
Well, we made it to most of the listening party, and you know, when our song came up, we still were really unsure how it was going to be received, but people ended up pulling their phones out and waving them back and forth, kind of like, you know, power ballad style. And so that was pretty cool to see people kind of picking up what we were putting down, basically.
I wish I could remember what the hell songs I was there for at the listening party, because I showed up for maybe, I don't know, a half hour or so. I was at the Mag Prom checking out the one-ups. And then I was like, well, I know DOD's going on. I have to make an appearance. People are going to miss me.
We actually had been working on a song prior to that. I don't know if you got a chance to check out our UNATCO remix from the original Deus Ex. My idea was, you know, hopefully the theme for Dwelling of Duels would match up that song, which we were working on, because I'm really actually very proud of that song. It's a lot more serious take on the material than obviously the ridiculousness of the DuckTales theme is. But, you know, so I was really proud of that song. But one of the cool things was Alex Brandon, one of the original composers for Deus Ex, happened to be at MAGFest this year. And so we got a chance to pull him aside, be like, hey, man, I've been, you know, listening to a lot of your stuff over the years, and we did a remix of Deus Ex, and he took a minute to listen to it and give us some feedback. And so that was really cool, having, you know, one of the actual original composers for the game listen to our remix at MAGFest.
That's pretty awesome. I eat chicken with him.
Oh, yeah.
MAGFest is such a crazy place.
One man performed the Star Wars, and that was a pretty amazing thing to
see. Oh yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So you said this is what, your first and second MAGFest respectively?
Yeah, so it was my second one, and yeah, Drew's first.
Yeah, I'd known about it for years. I never took the chance to buy the plane ticket and make the trip. So I knew I had to this year. So
was the wait worth it?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I would have liked to have been involved earlier on when it was kind of, as I understand, people telling me, you know, it was a lot more, smaller and, you know, kind of more, I guess, intimate, for lack of a better word. But, you know, it was still pretty cool to get up there.
Yeah, no, I think, Scott, you were asking me in an email because Jason had to point out that I've been to every one. And yeah, you're like, what are the early ones like?
Yeah, no. What was the very first one like? Like, how big was that?
The very first one was like 250 people. So if you would go to like one of the panel rooms at MAGFest, that was about the entire size of all of the first MAGFest.
Yeah, we were in I was in a couple of panels where the fire marshal was kicking people out. So obviously they're at a different level now.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. There were at the first one, there were, I want to say, like three actual arcade machines, a handful of DDR machines, because that was really popular at the time. And then like the LAN stuff, the console stuff, all of the video game stuff was just in one room, which may have been about the size of the panels room where DOD listening party was.
Right. Wow.
So imagine that was the game room, like all of the game room. It wasn't like it is now where there's a gigantic fucking airplane hangar dedicated just to consoles.
Right. You know, I was walking around the old retro room, and yeah, it was tough not to get stuck in there playing, you know, whatever old game for hours and missing everything else going on.
Yeah, it's a whole new beast. Ever since they moved to the Gaylord, it's just a completely different MAGFest in my eyes because of how big it is. You know, it's easy enough to remember people and bump into people you know when there's, you know, 2,000, 2,500 people walking around, but when there's 15,000 people, it's just insane. My mind still can't process the fact that this is the same MAGFest that I went to at the beginning. But it's cool.
Yeah, it was it was cool to, you know, talk about some of the stuff we're trying to do, and you know, like I said, put some faces with some of these internet handles I've been seeing for all these years.
I'm wondering if you guys saw me and you don't even realize it.
Oh,
you know, it's possible. We talked to a lot of people just, you know, shooting the shit about whatever. So
I've had developers.
Yeah, I ran into my MAGFest girlfriend that I stalk every year. God, I'm so bad with names. I can't even think of her name right now.
Oh, God.
But she runs a few of the panels sometimes. And the first year I was there, I saw her at a panel, and I was dressed up in my Wario costume. And so, in character, I just went up there and asked for her number, and her boyfriend was like, hey, I'm here.
So, are there pictures of you in this Wario costume?
Absolutely there are. So, if you go to our website, I even wrote a whole blog about it. And I'm actually pretty happy with how those turned out. And I think that's the whole reason Drew came the next year, is because of the adventure that I had and how much I talked it up.
Yeah, he gives a pretty vivid play-by-play for last year's. This year's, we weren't as extensive, but still covered it pretty well. So, you know, if, for your listeners out there that haven't been, if they wanted to take a look at our blog entries on MAGFest, yeah, I think you'll get a pretty good taste of what's going on there.
Yeah, as seen through my eyes.
Yeah.
That's my favorite thing about cosplay, is even though nobody knows me, even if I go in civilian clothes, being dressed up kind of gives you an excuse to be whoever you want to be, and I just have like no inhibitions going forth. And the Wario character is, you know, mischievous as he is, so I love just causing havoc.
Yeah, if you see Wario making his way through MAGFest, something's probably about to go down.
Just put that out there. Yeah, he will be there every year now.
Nice. I think, what is it, day three I'm looking at this picture of you as Wario?
Yeah, I think that was this year, day three.
Sebastian Wolf recognized me from last year and gave me a look that said, this asshole again? Yup, this asshole again.
Yeah, that's me.
That is beautiful. That's poetic. Near poetic.
Very much. Well, it's what I do, right?
Although, I do have to express my sadness that you spell MAGFest with a lowercase f. That hurts. Yeah. My soul.
I'm a noob, and there's no getting around that, right? So, yes, I'm showing my colors.
You'll learn. It's okay.
Yeah. Well, now I know.
It's to me, it's funny because Jason asked if I would want to bring you guys on the show, and I'm like, sure, but I might have to have a fist fight with this guy because he spells MAGFest with a lowercase f. Clearly a joke. And Jason was like, well, he's new to it. You need to give him a break. I'm like, Jason, if you can't tell that's a joke for me, I think you and I need to have a fist fight.
Well, we can throw down next MAGFest in Warrior costume. I guess you could be Mario and you just duke it out.
I don't know. If I'm dressing up at MAGFest, I got to go back to retired Zangief.
Okay. What's retired Zangief?
This was at MAGFest 10, I want to say, where I am what you would call a fat ass, to put it delicately, and I'm balding. Even more so than I was a couple of years ago. So I shaved my balding hair into a no-hawk, I called it, because there wasn't much left. And I wore a pink robe, and I had Angry Bird slippers on, and I had a big-ass beard, and I was fat retired Zangief. And I held up a sign that says, jobless, will bear hug for money.
Well, hopefully you at least went around spinning your fist in a bunch of people while you were there.
I just walked around sad. I looked sad and dejected. And people, for some reason, because it's MAGFest, people paid me for hugs. So that was something I didn't expect, but I made like $20 that day.
Genius.
Yeah, I'll have to find a picture of that so you could see the horrors that was me in a pink robe.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, man. So, for the band, you put out, what, a handful of game remixes this time? You did the Lavos theme, DuckTales, Deus Ex. What else have you guys done?
We got a few things in the works right now. We're, like Scott said, we were really kind of surprised we didn't think about getting into game remixes sooner as a band. So, we've got some things in the works, including a compilation album that some people on OC Remix are putting together called Castlemania.
Oh, nice.
Which is going to be an album of Castlevania music in the style of intro themes for wrestlers. So that idea, they reached out to us. They had heard some of our stuff, and we said, well, yeah, that's obviously a project we need to be involved in. So that's kind of one of the things in our plate right now. We've actually been putting a list together of things we just need to do. It's just really just a matter of time. We both work full time and, you know, do this when we can, but
is this going to be like an official overclocked remix project, or is this just like something the boards are doing?
Well, it started by one of the judges, so as long as it gets enough participants, I think it has a good chance of making it off the ground. It was started last year, and it doesn't seem like it's gotten too much in the way of progress, but it's kind of picked up pace lately, so hopefully it makes it. If not, we'll still put out the song, because I think what we got going is pretty solid.
Oh my god. What song are you doing?
So we're doing the theme for Trevor Belmont. It's the beginning stage of Castlevania 3.
Oh my lord. Do you have to like match it to a specific wrestler, or is it just a style of?
Yeah, it's supposed to be a style. I'm imagining, I guess, Trevor being the wrestler, so you know, hopefully we'll paint a picture where he's coming down the ramp with some fireworks, you know, talking trash and everything.
Yeah, he would like to get, he's trying to get voice actors once all the music's together, and just have like them kind of voice over the tracks with announcers. And it'd be awesome if, I don't think it'd ever happen, but if the album took off or something like that, maybe do some music videos or something like that with actual people dressed up in cosplay coming down a ramp, you know, to the music. I think that'd be fantastic.
That is incredible. Oh my lord, how did I not know about this project?
You know, there's so much stuff out there nowadays. You know, we're really glad to be, you know, getting involved. I mean, so many people are putting their stuff on YouTube or SoundCloud or just, you know, OC Remix. You know, OC Remix has been out there for a long time, and, you know, so many people are getting involved on there, whether it's submissions or, you know, just stuff that's happening on the boards. It's almost hard to keep up sometimes.
Do you have a favorite OC Remix project that's been out over the past how many years?
There's so many of them. I mean, one of my favorite... My favorite soundtrack has been over the years has been Chrono Trigger. So they put out Chrono Symphonic years ago, but you know, they had that Street Fighter. Didn't they do a Street Fighter compilation? I might be thinking of something else, even. But
Blood on the Asphalt, yeah.
Yeah,
we got used by Capcom, right?
Yeah, they took a bunch of those songs and made some new ones and put it in Street Fighter HD Remix, which is nuts.
It's been kind of cool to see like some of the guys that are, you know, started out doing remixes kind of get involved in some, you know, commercial projects. That's been pretty cool to see.
Yeah, look at someone like Jake Kaufman, who just started off doing just nerdy game remixes, and now he's, you know, he's done Shantae, he's done Shovel Knight, he's just blowing up. He's doing everything
exactly,
and it is crazy.
Yeah, it was cool at MAGFest. We went to the Indie Game Dev Expo Center, and you know, just talk to some of the guys there about what they're doing for music. You know, we're looking to get also, you know, if people are looking for soundtracks for their games, you know, seeing if we're, you know, we're the right fit. So we talked to some guys there, and you know, got some interest. But you know, it's like I said, it's cool to see people making stuff where they've just been revisiting game music. Now they're making their own. So that's been pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome that, you know, everyone, we all grew up playing these games, and now some of us are making them, others of us are appearing in them, doing music for them. Even stupid ass me, I got to do a voice for one, so it's just...
Oh, which one are you in?
Battle High 2A+ on the Xbox One. It's a 2D pixel visual fighting game.
Nice. I mean, it's getting so accessible nowadays as far as, you know, either making music or composing or even, you know, making, you know, a full game release. You know, that's one of the things that I think has been cool is watching, you know, where originally remixes were taking the limitations of the music, you know, as far as the hardware of the SNES or the NES or whatever, and kind of either just fleshing it out in a full instrumental version where you're just trying to hear what the composer, you know, original composer was actually imagining, versus, you know, nowadays where people are, you know, taking the same themes and taking it, making a genre shift or, you know, anything else. But, you know, so it's kind of, but getting it more accessible, you know, I think it's probably what's why people are getting more involved, why you're seeing more different, you know, types of involvement with all the different projects and all the different avenues for people to release their music. So
it's just gotten cool. So much easier to make music out of your bedroom these days.
Exactly. And you know, if you take the time, you can make it sound like a commercial product. You don't have to, you know, spend thousands and thousands of dollars on equipment to make something that sounds legit.
Now it's all about Fruity Loops. Get that.
Exactly. Yeah. if you were stalking me back in high school, you would have seen me fooling around with that for sure back in the day. But
nice. Where are those tapes that we could resurface and listen to?
Oh, those are deep in the vault.
those will be the bonus tracks on like the third greatest hits album.
Like
the
like
unearthed
that.
Demos.
So I'm actually planning on, because I don't have any of my music copyrighted, so don't put this out there until until I get the copyright secured.
But well, no, you got a week.
so what the copyright office, you can submit one form and get everything you've ever done copyrighted, as long as it's in a single release. So I was like, all right, well, let me just release an album of every song I've ever written. And I talked to the guys at the copyright office, and they're like, "Hey, totally do that." And so for one fee, cover it all. So
there you go, man.
Look out for the album of the life of Scott Wells. So.
Available on iTunes.
Yeah, you know, I gotta say, you know, back in the day, you're young, you're single, you got time to go through and you know, make just a lot of music. It's a lot harder nowadays. You know, we're both, you know, in our 30s, we're full-time jobs and everything else. So we've got to be a little more focused in what we do now, just because of time. But, you know, it's sometimes you got to look back to some of that old stuff, all that old crap you just sketched out and see like, oh, wow, it was actually a pretty cool idea. Maybe I need to flesh that out. So.
Yeah, it's actually great. So I actually have this card I found in a little shop, and it says, "Work while you have the light. You're responsible for the talent that has been entrusted to you." So that's kind of like a constant reminder that time is limited, and I might not have all the time to do stuff musically or use my talents the way I'd like to. So I've been pushing out as much music as I can make. It's pretty much takes up my free time, but I love doing it.
Nice. You gotta do what you love, man. There's no point in going on if you don't have something that you enjoy doing.
Yeah, and you know, I made a decision, you know, back years ago. I didn't want to use musicianship as to pay the bills, just so I'd be free to kind of do the music I wanted, rather than, you know, doing the music that, you know, was most lucrative or whatever. So, you know, I'm not regretting that in any way, but you definitely have to prioritize.
Yeah, although then that does leave you time to do passion projects, like what may be one of my favorite songs that you guys have done, 46 2 in D major.
Yeah, that was an idea from a long time ago, actually. And you know, like I said, we're just getting up to the competency to make that idea really fleshed out. So, you know, that occurred to me a while ago. Just the song 46 2. You know, if you listen to it, you kind of look at the lyrics, you know, see what it's about. You know, it's cool that it's in, you know, the original is one of our favorite songs of all time, but you know, it's in a minor key. It's got that dark feel to it, but you know, the lyrics totally work in a sort of you know, more bright, you know, joyous sort of tone. So that, you know, we just kind of wanted to see how that sounded. And, you know, people seem to like it. So
yeah, I love that song. I'm a big Tool fan. And it was great to hear someone do a Tool cover that wasn't Sober, because everybody does Sober.
Yeah, well, you know, back in the garage, we did some of the more obscure songs, you know, Lateralis and Schism, because Lateralis had just come out and we were really, you know, banging it out in the garage. But yeah, they, you know, we tried to make something a little different than what people expect.
I miss the days when my local rock station would play more than just Sober, Anima, or Schism.
Yeah. You know, yeah, Tool isn't always the most radio friendly just because of their format. So you gotta, if you want to get into their stuff, you gotta take the time.
See, but earlier, like years before then, I would call them up and be like, "Hey, I want to request Tool H," and 5 minutes later, H is on the radio. It was awesome. But then they just, it's like, we have too many Tool songs. They all sound the same. We'll just keep two of them, and no one will know the difference.
Right,
dicks.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. My friend asked me if I wanted to go see Tool. They're playing near me. And I was like, no, I kind of feel like I have to boycott them. Like, quit touring, goddammit. You need to put out an album like 10 years ago.
Weren't they held up by some legal issues that they couldn't work on a new album?
Every time, I think it's just a cop-out. You know, I'm not sure how much I believe it.
Who knows? I thought there was some kind of lawsuit that they were in with like one of the artists who did stuff with Anima that was like holding up any kind of releases they could do. I don't know. Shit's so crazy with them that you never know what's real and what isn't real.
Yep. He's actually making wine now too. Maybe he can like hire somebody to do that and, you know, leave that alone for a little bit. Like the grapes don't need all your attention, man. Get in the studio.
He's got wine. He's got Tool, A Perfect Circle, Pucifer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is ridiculous.
I want to like take bets for how many more Pucifer albums will come out before the next Tool album.
17. Oh man. So what do you think, what's next for you guys? What you mentioned the Castlemania project. Are you guys working on a full length album of video game style stuff? Or are you just going to focus on single releases for now? Anything in the works?
So I'm in several bands, and so each one kind of fills a different sound, and so I just
You're going to shit on Maynard for being multiple bands.
Hey, but I put out a release with every band every year so far, so I at least do work.
But do you make wine as well?
No, I don't do that, but I have a full-time job on top of that, and I go to school, so I feel like I've got the time, and I don't have a lot of money, you know, so I can't just pay someone to do crap I don't want. So, I will still stand by shitting on Maynard.
That's right, but Maynard. We're coming for you.
There's a few different musical projects in the works. As far as video game covers, it's kind of whatever the whim comes about. We'll definitely be a part of the DOD anytime MAGFest is around, and maybe more often than that. As far as releasing an album of all this stuff, it gets complicated legally. To secure the rights to do that, so it's easiest to do that in a single format for now. So that's generally how it's gonna happen.
I mean, you could always do the bootleg method. For the longest time, people at MAGFest, they would just sell burned CDs. Not everyone for the longest time didn't go the, yeah, we're gonna get this officially licensed and approved. It's just like, hey, we're gonna sell this on our Bandcamp for $5. Just buy it now until we're told we can't do it anymore.
Yeah, we're just waiting for that one bit of lightning to strike to make us into multimillionaires for one of our singles. So we just want to be, you know, ready for when that happens, basically.
Nice.
Yeah, plus it's good karma, you know? We're musicians. We don't want to steal from another musician. I think it's just a good way of being in the world, especially in the community of a musician. So they wrote it. They have the rights to it. So we'll pay them their dues.
Or you could always just do, like, the free releases, like OCR projects and stuff like that. Just get the name out there.
Yeah, for sure. You know, that's what kind of what the Castlemania project's looking at. You know, any of our Dueling of Duels stuff is going to be out there. You know, like I mentioned before, we got a list of ideas, you know, we're going to look at doing. It's just, you know, getting them actually out there is the challenge. But we're definitely in gear to get it. As much of it done as it can.
Well, keep me in mind if you guys ever do anything Earthbound related.
Ooh, that's a solid idea.
Yeah.
Are you guys Earthbound fans?
I never actually played it, Scott.
You're so missing out.
Yeah.
I never played it when it came around, but when the emulators came around and I gave it a shot and was like, man, I can't believe I missed this. And I guess I understand why, knowing the history of the release, it didn't get the greatest marketing. But, man, that's such a fantastic RPG game.
Have you guys checked out the Bound Together remix project?
No.
I'm sad now. Actually, a lot of people think it is an OC remix project, but it's not. It's something I put together. Oh my God. How many years ago was this? Way too many years ago. Probably like 10 or 11 years ago, 12 years ago.
Oh, they're on God. My to-do list right now.
Oh my God. I'm so old. The age, it hurts. But yeah, my favorite thing is when people say, like, they'll be like, oh, what's your favorite Overclocked remix project? And someone's like, Bound Together. And then the Overclocked remix Twitter account has to be like, that's not us.
Yeah. I guess that's where you want to be with your group is that, you know, even if stuff is not done by you, it's still attributed to you.
Yeah. I was in talks with them for the longest time about doing a re-release with them. But yeah, I said, you guys have the reins to the project, do what you got to do. And as far as I know, nothing just went anywhere. So
yeah,
that's a bummer.
That place is just so busy. You know,
but if a re-release ever does happen, I'll have to keep you guys in mind to contribute a new track if it ever happens. At this point, I think I've given up on it ever getting any kind of anniversary re-release.
When was the original release?
I don't know. It was a Halloween. God, how many years ago was it? I have the files here. I could probably just pull up and see like what the original date was. Properties. Let's do this live on the show. No, this was clearly not from 2011.
Why the hell did I use the YouTube release date, but I don't think that counts. Yeah, it was published to YouTube on 2014, at least the one I'm looking
at. Why can't I see the original dates for these? Ah, here we go. Modified August 21st, 2006.
Nice.
Okay, so you missed the 10-year.
Yeah.
Yeah, the re-release.
Do an 11-year...
An 11-year anniversary.
Maybe 15. I know we were hoping to do something for the 10-year with Overclocked. And, you know, I talked with DJ Pretzel. I talked with a bunch of the other guys, Lion Tamer and Steve-O, just a bunch of the people who were in charge of doing, like, album projects. And, you know, I thought things were up and running. They sent out an email to get permissions from everyone. And as far as I know, it just kind of stalled out. So...
Yeah, you know, just like I said, that place is so busy. We, you know, I sent our Deus Ex remix to them a couple months ago, and it's in the pipeline to be judged probably sometime next year. So, you know, they've got a lot on their plate.
Yeah, it's nuts how crazy that site can get.
Yeah.
They've gotten huge, though. I remember when it was just sure. David, you know, approving whatever remixes that came along, and then judging panels and queues and... It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
How much it has grown.
It's a big community out there.
It is. And it just grows. It's cool to see how many people out there, just this nerd culture has grown and become more accepted. More and more people, wider acceptance. Good stuff.
For sure.
So what games are you guys playing?
I'm actually... I'm probably about 10 hours into Mass Effect Andromeda. I don't know if, you know, people are familiar with kind of some of the reviews and criticisms. I was a big Mass Effect fan. You know, I played the whole trilogy multiple times through. And yeah, I got to say, I'm a little disappointed. That's kind of where I'm at right now. I'm not going to get too much into it, but it's, you can tell it's not the same level of love was not put into it.
That's funny, because I'm playing a game I'm pretty disappointed with, too. Amazon had a pretty good sale on Final Fantasy 15, so I picked that up for like half its normal price. And I'm really sorry I even paid that much for it, because I'm only maybe 5 hours deep into it, but it's a really bad way to start a game, and I don't imagine it getting much better.
I don't know if it's just getting older and having less time for the bullshit, if that's what it is. Maybe, like, you know, back in the day, I would have had a longer fuse for some of the stuff, but it's like, man, get to the point.
Yeah. I definitely feel there.
I just finished the new Zelda game, which is fantastic, but even it kind of started slow. I was like, overhyped. I don't know, maybe I bought into it, but once you got all the required items and could just go explore the world, man, it was pretty awesome. I really did love that game.
I think a lot of longtime Zelda players were a bit thrown off with Breath of the Wild because of how it begins, where, you know, you don't have any real story to start it off. It's just, you woke up, go.
Yep.
Don't I have to, like, learn how to swing a sword and catch a horse and do dumb petty shit first? And it's like, no, just go. What do you, just go. Walk around, do things, go. Why are you standing here? Go. You see that twig? Pick it up and hit things. Go.
Yeah, I'm going to probably, once I finally give up on Mass Effect Andromeda, I'm going to go back to Dark Souls 3. You know, the Dark Souls series is something that is, you know, they're not going to handhold, any, you know, your way through the tutorial of anything. So, you know, that's something I can appreciate.
You like the brutally difficult games?
You know, I think it's kind of a mischaracterization that is brutally difficult. But, you know, I can see why people say that. But, you know, it keeps you engaged the whole time. You're never on autopilot, because anything can go wrong, you know, just about any time.
Yeah.
So, you know, it keeps you engaged. You know, you don't start, you know, if a game's not keeping me engaged, I start thinking about, well crap, I got to do this and whatever. But, you know, here, you know, you play something like Dark Souls where, you know, well, you can kind of ignore whatever's going on upstairs or something.
Nice. What about you, Scott? Anything you're looking forward to playing soon?
So I only game every so often. I actually, most of my gaming nowadays is done vicariously through the Game Grumps. I watch them religiously. And I feel like if I met them, they should know who I am, because I've banged around them so long now. Like, come on, I know everything about you. You know, I'm there every night. You know who I am? But no, they're incredibly entertaining, and so I've played Dark Souls 3 with the Game Grumps, although I don't own the game and I've never touched it.
I need listeners as devoted as you are to the Game Grumps.
Yeah, don't we all?
Oh, man. Well, I know we've been chatting for a while. Is there anything else you guys wanted to talk about?
You know, I just say, you know, people should keep an eye out for what we're doing, because, you know, we got a lot of things in the works. You know, I wish we could release quicker, but it's just kind of the way things are.
How can people keep in touch with you guys?
Yeah, our website is out there, moreeffectband.com, M-O-I-R-E, moreeffectband.com. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, so, you know, just give us a shout.
Yeah, where did the band name come from, by the way?
So, when it came time to find a band name, which is always an awkward period for any band, I was flipping through a dictionary, an old school paper dictionary. I know, crazy.
With like how old pages,
the band is back then. Yeah,
only '90s kids will recognize these items.
And so, in a dictionary, it's pretty rare for there to be actual images, and next to the Moria effect was an image kind of describing, well, it shows what the Moria effect is, and I thought the image was pretty interesting, and brought it to the band, and it stuck for a little while, until people started calling us More Effort, and what was it that you called us earlier? That's sort of a common problem with with the name. So we've tried changing it, and nothing we've changed it to just stuck, so Moria effect it is.
Yeah, a little side note. We took a high school band trip to the Netherlands. We were trying to talk about our band name. We saw some graffiti that said Downshot. We're like, oh, that's cool. We'll be Downshot. That'll be our name. And then we get online and we find this Dutch heavy metal band called Downshot. We emailed them like, hey guys, we were going to be Downshot, but it seems like y'all got it, so never mind.
What did they say? Did they reply? Be like, okay.
Yeah, they did, you know, kind of with some broken English. Like, I get this strange email, and it says they want to be Downshot, but they decide not to. I think it's very cool. So I think that was pretty much the gist of it.
That is a cool name, though.
Yeah.
But what is Moray Effect? Like, what is it?
It's basically like a visual effect when you've got intersecting lines that are close together. They kind of create this rainbow, distorted, bendy color. You're just going to have to Google image it. There's no way to describe it, which is why the dictionary even had a picture of it next to it, because words don't really do it justice.
Mm. Do you think people are going to confuse you guys as like a Mass Effect tribute band?
I hope not, because we existed way before Mass Effect. But, you know, Mass Effect is
for a trademark
violation. Yeah. You know, I'll go ahead and a little spoiler. We do have Mass Effect on, you know, the wish list of remixes. So maybe one day we'll get one out there.
Nice. Good stuff. So yeah, it's been great chatting with you guys. Keep up with the band via their Twitters, the website. Any other places we could keep track of you guys?
Twitter, the website, Facebook, and at MAGFest, look for Wario.
Yeah. And I'll plug my other bands, too. If you're in the Baltimore area, I play with a group called Broken Choice. I'm also in a band called Bathe in the Fire. What's the other? Signate is the other band that I'm in. I'm in so many, I can't even remember the name.
You're in four bands?
I am, yes.
What the fuck, dude?
Well, like you said, you gotta work while you have the light. That's what it says, right? So,
good lord, that is a lot of band. Tell me, they're all different genres.
They are. So Broken Choice is kind of like your straightforward rock. Bathe in the Fire is a little more on the lighter side of things, although it gets heavy from time to time. But that's the project that I actually write for. So it's straight up just what I want it to be. Signate is another group with a friend who does like electronic pop, almost like not Death Cab for Cutie. What was the other one that he was in? Man, I'm blanking. Anyways, but it's like electronic pop, so yeah, completely different. And then what Drew and I are doing, especially now that we're in the realm of VGM covers and doing cover songs, that's kind of filling that niche for me.
You need a country band in there.
Okay, yeah. My friend, my boss,
I actually had to
Wheeler Walker Jr. the other day, and he's like a comedian, country music singer, pretty good stuff.
Nice.
Yeah, we actually had a buddy that does some video production, and he had a commercial for some insurance, and he wanted a country song, so I did this stupid little country sounded thing for him. And so if you're in South Carolina and you hear a Safe Auto commercial with some country music, yeah, that'll be me.
And how can I get that song to play on the show?
that might take some digging, but I'll see if I can get that for you.
Because we end all of our shows with some music, so clearly we're going to play some of your songs. And I figure
I don't know if the country, the 30-second country bit is the one that, you know, our listeners want to hear, but we'll see what we can do.
See, when I could find goofy, hard-to-find rarities like that to include on, those make my day.
So, yeah.
But any particular songs that you would like me to play from you guys tonight?
Shoot, what would be? I mean, the DuckTales
is yeah, you definitely got to do DuckTales because that's a pretty unique track. I think Deus Ex is sort of like up there with what we can really do and what we really are. And 46 and 2 is another really really solid track.
Nice, sounds good. And then hopefully a Safe Auto song.
Yeah.
Make it happen. Make it happen, B-Rad.
I'll look for it.
Well, again, it was fantastic having you guys on. Do you have any final words to end the show?
No, man. Thanks for checking us out and listening to us ramble on for, you know, an hour or so. So appreciate you sticking with us.
Down, sticking to them. You heard fate favors the fool. They're saying thanks for the Joy in my child, listen, digging through mild, numb shadow. My shadow shed in skin. I've been picked scabs again. I'm down, digging through my old muscles, looking for food. I've been crawling on my belly, clearing out what could have been. I've been wallowing in my own confused, insecure delusions. For peace to cross me over, or a word to guide me in. I wanna feel the changes coming down, wanna know what I've been hiding. My shadow, change is coming through my shadow. My shadow, shedding skin. I've been picking my scabs again. I've been crawling on my belly, figuring out what could have been. I've been wallowing in my own chaotic, insecure delusion. I wanna feel the change come to me, feel the outside turning in. I wanna feel the metamorphosis and cleansing I've endured in. My shadow, my shadow, change is coming. Now is my time. Listen to my muscle memory, contemplate what I've been. I choose to live and to grow, take and give and to move, learn to love and to cry, kill and die and to be paranoid and to lie, hate and fear and to do what it takes to.